Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Spanning the nerd world and feeding your fandom, it's time for the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Here's your host, James Witham.
Even when we have to get our hands dirty, we clean up good. It's episode 401 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. I'm James Witham. If you listened to last week's 400th episode, you heard my review of The Cleaning Lady, the brand new show on Fox. So I thought this week let's take an even deeper dive into that show with stars Elodie Young and Martha Milan, who are going to talk all about what we've seen so far on The Cleaning Lady and what's to come as well when you watch the show on Fox. And if you need a reason to jump into the show, this conversation might give that to you. Also, DC's Peacemaker now streaming on HBO Max. I'm going to talk to Alison Araya about that. And she's also got another project with Netflix as well that's super, super exciting. Can't wait to dive in and learn more about both of those things from her. Also, you know the Arrowverse back in full force this week. Going to talk about Superman and Lois and Naomi and so many other things in our big reviews this week. Sneak in some nerd news as well. If you're freaking out about the Batman, I'll tell you why you need to chill out a little bit later on. But let's then get things started, shall we? Elodie Young and Martha Milan join me to talk about The Cleaning Lady. Let's talk to them next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Patrick Meegan. I'm an executive producer at Family Guy, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
So if you're not watching The Cleaning Lady Monday nights at 9 o'clock on Fox, you really, really should be. There's so much good stuff going on in this show. And these two, I swear, we're already having fun and barely even started yet. It's Elodie Young and Martha Milan. Ladies, how you doing?
We good. How you doing? Thanks for having us.
Oh my God, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
So again, I was so taken in by this show right away. One of the things that drew me to the series was the fact that there's so many different and interesting aspects to this story. So what made you both fall in love with this series when you were first getting started?
Well, for me, I mean, obviously it being centered on the Filipino culture, the family itself was just something that I'd never read before. So it was so exciting to see that. And obviously being Filipino, there's far and few between roles that are specifically for that. So I really wanted to be a part of it. Yeah. That was the most exciting part. And of course, obviously being Elodie Young on the project, I wanted to just jump in on. So
you have to know, James, Martha, it was love at first sight, really. So aww. Yeah, at least on my hand, I don't know about.
No. I can only speak for myself, but.
Well, no, for me, because we met on Zoom. So it was just like, oh my goodness, I don't even know how we're going to connect with this. So I'm so happy because I was the same way too. I was like, oh, she's so fun.
And I was like, she's brilliant. I was in the Zoom audition with Martha. And, you know, she was one of a few girls that went to the recall for Fiona's part. And she was the first one in the morning. And just like, I don't know, she was bringing it. Everything was felt. She's such a, you know, an honest, truthful actress. And you had an immediate connection through Zoom. Who'd thought of that, you know? So when I knew that she was on board, I was like, oh, this is going to be just brilliant because, you know, to play with such a partner, because Fiona and Tony are kind of an odd couple. They're, you know, they're like sisters. They're sister-in-law, but they're kind of, you know, sisters. And this bond is kind of the cement of the show, I think. You know, those two women, they're undocumented and they go through so much for their family. And then just knowing that Martha and I will be just, you know, we'll be right in there during our scenes. And it just feels like, I don't know. And again, I only speak for myself, James. but, you know, every time on set, I know that it's going to be, you know, one of our scenes with Martha. It just feels that we're not acting. We're just there. We're there for each other as well. And,
exactly.
And I feel for her character because I feel, you know, there's this real connection between the two of us, and I think it I'm hoping it, you know, it shows for the relationship Fiona and Tony have.
Yeah, for me, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. It really comes through. It really does. Go ahead, Martha.
Piggybacking on what Elodie said, you know, basically the minute that I saw her and she had her props and everything on Zoom, I was like, oh, we're going to have fun. She had a basket of clothes and everything.
Nice.
Like,
oh, nice.
Yeah, we're going to have fun here. Even though we weren't in life, you know, in person with each other, straight away, I knew we had the same process with working. And then just her, I just her humor, I could already sense it. So for me, I was just like, okay, we're gonna have fun here. And you know, I echo everything that Elodie has said right now. I mean, for me, just it's just so incredible to work with someone who is just so open and present every time. And yeah, and I think that's the main thing, is like we have our back, like on set, even offset as well, I have to say. And you know, and that's something that just resonates throughout the performances, I hope, as well, you know. It's like, so it's a love affair, as Elodie said.
Clearly, yeah.
It's not just one way. She said it, Jake.
Yes, she did. She did say that. It's always nice when that's reciprocated. That's always good. I'm glad we got that out of the way.
I didn't want to leave her hanging.
You definitely don't want to do that.
I adore Elodie. So,
and it seemed genuine too. So there's that. This isn't just for Zoom's sake.
No, you can't even see us. It's through our voices.
There you go. Exactly. So the show doesn't shy away. You touched on this a second ago from your character's undocumented status. So how do you feel like the cleaning lady deals with the real life situations and challenges that many people are facing on a daily basis?
I feel that, you know, there's the way it's written is quite intelligent, because we are shining the light on those problems. You know, these women, they're immigrant, they are undocumented. It touches very important topics, and yet we are in a fiction. You know, it's romanticized, and there is the criminal scene, and it's set in Vegas. So I think this show is a great combination of thrilling moments and cliffhangers and entertainment. Yet I'm hoping, and this is what I think is the goal, it's like I think that it's asking questions, and it's shining the light on people that we don't often talk in fiction. So I'm hoping, you know, that it makes people think and it opens conversations.
Yeah, I mean, also with everything that Elodie said, you know, it includes all the entertainment value of explosions, drama and everything. And then it's cleverly weaving in all these topical relevant issues that people are facing today. But I mean, it's grounded through the relationships of family, just really, you know, begging the question to everybody of like, if you were in that situation, how far would you go? Which is what the show says all the time. How far would you go? You know, and it creates, if you do invest in these characters, hopefully, you know, you create the empathy that what, you know, undocumented people go through, because I don't think anybody ever wants to be undocumented. I think it's the reasons that, you know, people were kind of exploring through the show, which is pretty much throughout the relationships between Tony and Fiona, and obviously with Armand and on his side as well, his backstory, there's definitely issues of, you know, immigration and the transitions that any immigrant has to go through. So it's highlighting those topics that I think are so relevant today that people, you know, kind of are fully aware but never really talk about.
Well said. So Elodie, for you, let's talk about some of that empathy a little bit here, because we see Tony enter some very, let's call them, morally gray areas in this first couple of episodes. How do you feel like she struggles with that? Or is she really just in a place that she'll do anything for her family regardless?
I think this is how I felt it as myself, a mother, you know. I'm hoping, but I know in my guts that I would go, you know, I would go as far as I can to do, you know, to save my kid. So I think this is, you know, this is the starting point for Tony. She wants to save Luca, and then she's confronted to horrific choices. So I do think that every time she's facing one of those situations, she has to deal mentally with her own actions and her own decisions. You know, I do think that for her, it's a constant balance of, you know, making those horrible choices. So I don't think it will leave her intact. She won't come out of it just thinking that, you know, she's, how can I express it? I do think that it has an impact on how she feels about her actions, but I do think that she follows her sole goal, which is saving Luca.
No, I completely agree. You know, in what Elodie's saying is just that the thought process is just, you know, purely about instinctively as a mother to save your son. You're not even questioning your actions. It's just the fact that you're a mother. This is your responsibility. And I think for me, I'm not one. So I had to just kind of dig deep, but also, you know, just kind of put myself in those shoes of mothers who, I look at my mother and what she's done for us, you know, it's to what length. And nobody questions a mother's actions. And I think that's what, you know, Elodie is going through during those moments. It's just, it's do or die all the time for her son, because her son is in a desperate situation of death. So, yeah. Is that a good translation, Tony?
I think you both nailed it. I think that Elodie. At least from the outside looking in, that seems good to me. I think that covers it quite well, actually.
I love it.
Martha,
for
you, clearly Tony's hiding a big and dangerous secret from Fiona. I keep going back to that first episode where she tells her, where Fiona says, I'm going to sell drugs to get this better job. And Tony kind of jumps all over for it. And I mean, we see how she reacts to that, how Tony reacts to that. So how do you feel like Martha's would react? No spoilers, of course, if that secret gets out there and she finally does find out, does that empathy just kind of come through, or maybe that would, maybe there is some pushback there?
I mean, obviously I think there's hypocrisy there, and in terms of if she's like, he's scolding me about doing drugs and what she's doing, but you know, in general, again, it just goes back to why we're doing all of this. This is all about family. I mean, the only reason why Fiona would even think of doing that is for her kids. She wants to get out of her situation. She's been living and hiding for 15 years. And to be constantly surrounded by all that glitz and glamour, you know, and money in Vegas, and that she's in under these circumstances, all of them are, you know, of course there's that envy or that dream of wanting to get out, and any opportunity to do that for her family is a chance, and even for Fiona and Tony, you know. And I think that's why it, you know, we're not justifying it in any way, but it's just the reasons that we even kind of contemplate of going down that direction. Again, it's all about just, you know, protecting our family, really giving each other better lives and opportunities. So, but yeah, you know, there is that moment of just like, how can you even judge me in your position? And, you know, I think that's happens a lot in families, you know, regardless of whatever, you know, these are extraordinary circumstances that we're facing. But we always judge each other as families, because there's that loving, how is it, rivalry always kind of thing, you know, in comparison, regardless of how much we love each other. So I think it's instinctive that happens.
Absolutely. We're talking to Elodie Young and Martha Milan from Fox's The Cleaning Lady, which you can watch every Monday night at 9 o'clock Eastern time on Fox. Now, I want to talk about Armand for a second. You guys touched on him a few minutes ago. He's a very interesting character to me, because like, he's a bad guy, but in many ways, he's also not a bad guy. So how do you think Tony actually views him at this point?
I think, you know, this is a relationship that has a starting point and it goes somewhere else. And they meet in extreme circumstances. She's threatened by them. He represents this criminal syndicate, the mob. And she, in order to save her life, she said that she can clean the crime scene. Almost immediately, I think he has a liking for her for some reason, and we'll get to understand probably why later. But I think, like, hopefully the audience gets to see Armand not just for his function, but for the whole human being, that complex human being that he is. And again, I think that's one of the goal of this show, is living in the gray areas and showing human beings. You know, I'm not solely, you know, I'm not entirely good or bad. I think we all have layers of good and bad. And I don't think this is about judging. I think it's about looking at behaviors, looking at situations, looking at people in those horrific circumstances and trying to understand them. So they'll get to know each other a little bit more throughout the season, and she'll get to discover another side of him, which is not being, you know, almost the head of this crime syndicate.
Absolutely. So, Marthy, when you said a few minutes ago that you weren't a mother, that kind of floored me because that makes episode what happened in episode two even more incredible to me when we find out something about Fiona's son, Chris, and that scene, which was just so incredible and it was so emotional. And being a teenager is already hard. So you understand why Chris would be upset. But how do you feel like this is going to affect their relationship going forward? But that, I mean, that was just a brilliant scene on your part.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you know, it's such an, first of all, I mean, the fact that she put him in that situation and then lied, I mean, it's just so hard to bear, to express that to her son. But I think, obviously it's going to taint their relationship. The trust is no longer there, but I mean, it brings back memories of how I was terrible as a teenager. I mean, like, I'm not going to play the saint here. I definitely was rebellious and quite strong-minded and stubborn, and never really understood my parents' point of view. You know, I didn't understand that they were struggling as well as immigrants, and in terms of just like what they're dealing with in during the transitions. I was just a very selfish teenager. So during that scene, I just saw myself. I was like, that's me. And I know my mom is like, oh, we remember that. So from in that sense, even though not being a mother, I think from I really tried to step in my mother's shoes of how she felt when I was so combative and so annoying.
I feel like this is a whole other show that we could be doing right now.
I don't know. I don't know. Want,
don't want to put it out
road.
There, but if Martha ever writes a book, I'm buying it. That's all I'm saying.
Let's just say, you know, I'm using all my resources for this. Okay.
There we go.
And obviously, you know, I mean, being around Elodie and meeting Mina and that, just seeing them together, it's just I always try to draw experiences or just moments from whatever I'm seeing and that it's just the relationships that you have with your children. But I mean, I'm pretty immature, as everyone can attest to that on set. So it's like it's easy to.
Oh, you're not immature. You're great fun. And Martha has. It's just like
there's
so,
a, yeah. There's a okay. big difference between immature and great fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Fun, high level of energy, and it just brings, you know, like the whole set is just really fun when Martha's around. It's just.
Oh, I totally can't tell that at all based on this conversation.
I think it's definitely we definitely egg each other on, Elodie and I, on set. Most of the time, everybody's trying to get us to calm down and stuff, and we're trying not to laugh.
I love that. So one of the things that's really cool about the show to me, too, is that, you know, obviously Tony's a very skilled doctor. You've got Fiona, who's built a life for herself for over 15 years in America, undocumented, and the strength that comes from that. So there's a lot of pushback from these ladies as well, though, because the people that don't take them seriously. So how is it playing these women that are being assertive and about the respect that they really deserve? Because to me, that was something that was very cool and surprising for me in the show as well.
For me and for Tony, she is definitely stripped from her status. She was she was a doctor, a surgeon in her country. She had to step back to take care of her son. She arrives here. She's stripped again. She goes undocumented, and she needs to take a job to provide, you know, for Luca. And so she follows Fiona's lead and get a job as a cleaning lady. So there's a big difference from the person she was in her own country and the person she becomes here in America. But I'm just thinking that, you know, as much as this is a hard step to take for her, a greater motivation. And maybe there are moments where, you know, Tony feels that she doesn't get the respect that she deserves or that she's known before. But at the same time, when you're in survival mode, you just go for what you have to do. And especially when you have a family, you know, I just know that from, you know, and it's different circumstances for my dad, but it was, you know, he had a different life in Cambodia. And the first thing he had to do when he arrived in France was working in a supermarket and pushing carts. So that was his job. And, you know, and I think I never heard him, I don't know, say anything wrong about this. You know, it's just when you already have to go and deal with so much, when you have so much on your plate. And I think that's what, you know, that's the parallel that I can do with Toni. She's got so much on her plate. Then she goes and does this, and she does it with pride, actually. She does it with pride, and she does it, you know, the best she can, and she gets on with it because this is what she has to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, for me, as Fiona, her strength comes from, I think, just wanting more constantly, because she does, you know, Toni is a doctor, she's established, and there is that difference in class. And whereas Fiona is just trying to make something of it, of herself still, and trying to find a voice being undocumented, and at the same time, you know, trying to raise her children with integrity, knowing that they know that she is illegal. So I think the struggle with that is, yeah, it's extremely challenging, because how do you kind of, I guess, find the pride in being illegal, and at the same time, you know, telling your kids what to do? So it's about just the actions that we do, and the fact that we are putting ourselves through, you know, doing menial jobs in order to really get through life, regardless of whatever we have to do. And I think it's a testament to all parents just doing what they can for their children, even if it, you know, stepping down from a certain status, or, you know, there's so many people that I know in New York. It's like you hear so many stories that they used to be doctors like Toni and them, and they're driving taxis or doing Lyft and Uber, or I know my friend, she has a degree in economics, and she got a green card, but she still had to work in the hotel and clean rooms, you know. So it's not even being illegal, it's just about how the system is, but everybody still comes here for the dream and the opportunities, you know, because it's possible.
Really quickly, ladies, before I let you go, obviously the end of episode 2 to me was a really, really big one. We see that Garrett has some photos of Toni and Armand, and it looks like things are, and now he's going to try and turn her to his side. So how much is the end of episode 2 gonna ratchet up the stress of this show going forward? No spoilers, of course.
Well, yes, we're introducing Garrett Miller. The it's going to be, how do you say, a game of cat and mouse. He is going to try to get Toni to be an informant for him, because she's already in the crime scene, right? So what can I say to not spoil? This is going to be interesting, you know, this... Because also Toni will develop a different relationship with Armand. So is she going to be willing to give Armand away? I don't know. I can't tell you right now. More, because I would spoil everything.
No spoilers.
Father, help!
I know. You're like, wait, what happened? No, for me, you know, being in that scene with Garrett and him being introduced in the bathroom and stuff, you can already tell that there's another element being added to the show, where there is the cat and mouse situation, but it's also heightening the stakes of, like, you know, what Toni has to deal with, whether it has to be the legal side or the underworld. And I think that, yeah, I got the thumbs up there. I think, you know, there is that she gets pulled in both worlds in terms of doing what's right and what's wrong. And that's who Garrett represents. He's I don't want to say he's the devil, and then Armand is also the angel, but he's a mob. So it's just like, this is what Elodie's talking about in terms of the grays in all characters, where they may represent a certain thing, but why and what they're doing are the interesting elements of who they are as characters. But I mean, Fiona already she's got she's got the nose. Something's going on there. She already got interrogated by Garrett. So I don't get to do too many scenes with Oliver Hudson, but when I do, they're quite fun.
See, so that's why you need to watch this show. You come for the fun, you come for the big action, you come for the drama. There's so much stuff to be around, yes, for when you're watching The Cleaning Lady Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern on Fox. You can also watch episodes again on the Fox app as well. Martha Milan, Elodie Young, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, James.
Thank you so much.
And let me tell you, if you're already hooked on this show, the game is just beginning. There's so much great stuff to look forward to on The Cleaning Lady, and so many good performances as well by those two ladies. Just so, so good. And the entire cast really, brings it for the rest of the season. So make sure you're watching The Cleaning Lady Monday night on Fox. You won't be sorry that you gave this show a chance if you haven't done that already. You can catch up on the Fox app right now, as a matter of fact. Thank you so much again to Martha Milan and Elodie Young for joining me this week to talk about The Cleaning Lady. So much fun. Up next, another fun conversation, this time with Allison Array. She's going to be talking about DC's Peacemaker and some other stuff that she's involved in. Well, that conversation's next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
This is April Bowlby from DC's Doom Patrol, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
So there's a lot of great stuff streaming. You already know that, but did you know that there's one particular person that you should be interested in? A couple of things that are streaming this week. DC's Peacemaker on HBO Max and Brazen on Netflix, and she's in them both. It's Allison Array. Allison, how you doing?
Oh, I'm so well. Thank you so much for having me.
So exciting week for you then, huh?
Yeah, it's a big week. It just so happens that both these shows are coming out the same day. Yeah, which is super fun.
So let's start with Peacemaker. I mean, you're certainly no stranger to DC TV. You've spent some time on Arrow. You were in Supergirl for a little bit as well. How different was your experience on Peacemaker than from the Arrowverse?
I think it's a different experience because of the Suicide Squad and the feature film version coming out first, and just like a bigger world. Getting to work with James Gunn was incredible, and obviously John Cena, and it was just a completely different experience. Like, it was a big opportunity, and I was really excited to be on board.
Did it just feel bigger? Did it have that like movie aspect to it when you guys were on set?
For me, it did, definitely. You know, obviously not the same budgets as a feature film, but I think also starting the show, it being a new show, and, you know, those first couple of episodes, finding the tone, finding the humor, finding the characters. Yeah, that part was really unique.
Speaking of finding the characters, going into this 3-episode premiere, we don't know a ton about Amber and her husband, Lenny. So how much can you actually tease for us about who they are?
Well, I think this is going to be a really interesting marriage on screen. They're not the happiest couple, but they certainly are dynamic. And I think that's all I can say.
Dynamic. And given how this show is, that should be very interesting going into this thing. So you talked about James Gunn. We know how big of a fan of music he is. He's a music nut. So how much does music actually play a role in this series, and how fun was that?
Music is another layer of character, I think, in this series. And one of the things that thrilled me about this project was, along with the scripts, there was a playlist. So it really helped get into the tone, get into the mind of this world. And it introduced me to some new music as well, which I loved.
That's always cool. Do you guys actually hearing the music while you were on set, while you were doing scenes? Because I know a lot of times you guys don't get to hear the soundtrack while you're shooting, right?
Yeah, we did. For one particular scene, there was live music. So that was really cool to have that playback.
Very nice. Very nice. So now the running joke, speaking of the Suicide Squad, the running joke with John Cena was that he spent the majority of the time either in his Peacemaker suit or in his underwear. Was that true of this show as well? And what was it like working with John?
Well, I think you're going to have to wait and see and watch and see just how much time he spends in his tidy whities, if indeed he does. And working with John was incredible, like incredible. He's hilarious and so professional. I had a blast. I had a really memorable, memorable time working on this show.
Excellent, excellent. So it's easy to kind of look at this series and you see the humor, you see the intense action and stuff like that. But much like the Suicide Squad, do you feel like this movie brings some interesting social commentary to the table as well?
100%. I think, you know, within the superhero world, there's so much room for social commentary. And I think Peacemaker definitely has elements of that, you know, peppered throughout the entire series. And I think audiences are going to really dig that.
So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the other project that you've got going on this week. And that is Brazen on Netflix, which is actually an adaptation, for anybody that doesn't know, of the Nora Roberts book, Brazen Virtue. And if you don't know Nora Roberts, you're not paying attention because she's got like 1,000 books. So
yeah.
What's the most interesting aspect of this story for you?
I mean, to be honest, working with Alyssa Milano was a real treat. I remember growing up and watching her and always like, she was one of my idols. Like, she was one of the reasons why I was so enamored with acting when I was a kid. So to get a chance to work with her was really sweet. And working with Monica Mitchell, a brilliant director, the cast was amazing. And to bring the story to life was great.
So were you introduced to, for Alyssa Milano, were you a Who's the Boss fan or were you a Charmed fan? Because it's usually one or the other. Or are you going to surprise me with something that I'm not thinking about?
No, I was a big Who's the Boss fan. 100%.
There you go, yeah. Excellent. I love that. I love that. So talking about your character a little bit, it seems like Captain Rivera doesn't have an easy job. You know, since we've seen the trailer that she's dealing with a serial killer now in this particular instance, just how difficult is this case going to get?
You know, it's a juicy one, definitely. It's intriguing. The second I read the script, I thought, wow, this is a great story. I think for Captain Rivera, this being in collaboration with this author and taking this case and working together, huge new opportunity. And, you know, it's not the way usually run cases, but the outcome is what we want.
Oh, I can only imagine. Now, you talked about Alyssa Milano and her character, Grace McCabe. We saw in the trailer that she's kind of want to get involved with the investigation. And it always makes me wonder in these situations, is Captain Rivera just kind of open to her being a part of this, or is she like, you know, get out of my way, let us do our job, and, you know, you're just going to be in the way here, sort of thing?
Well, I think, you know, very much following protocol, you know, this isn't the norm. And so having that assistance, that outside assistance come in definitely shakes things up. But I think, you know, the virtue of having her part of it and her expertise as an author and being able to collaborate really helps the case overall. So I think that's where, you know, that collaboration that is non-traditional can help.
How do you feel like this project balances that too, though? Because obviously, you know, if you or I rolled up into a police station and said, hey, I want to help, they'd probably say, get out of here. So and you see this a lot too, and sometimes it's done well and sometimes it's not done as well. How do you feel like this show helps? Obviously this is fiction, but how do you feel like it brings a little bit of a true aspect to this as well?
You know, that's really interesting. I think there's a community out there of online sleuthers that who have made, you know, serious contributions to cases. And so I think, you know, there are instances where outside perspective or outside help can actually help an investigation. And I mean, that's not always the case, obviously, but I do think that there are some instances where it can help. And this particular show, it really does highlight an instance where it does definitely help.
I mean, just look at Unsolved Mysteries, which is also streaming on Netflix right now. You can take that as an example of that from over the years and even now, too, as a matter of fact. So I guess that could be the case as well.
For sure.
I was thinking about this as I was getting ready to talk to you and looking at the projects that you're doing, and I'm thinking there's a little bit of an overlap here, I think. So other than just being a fan of yours, which is, you know, a natural connection, why do you think fans of Peacemaker would also enjoy Brazen and vice versa?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, as a character actor, I have had the incredible privilege of jumping from different genres and working in an array of different projects. So I think anyone interested in following my work, you know, is always going to get like a big mishmash of some comedy, some drama, some superhero stuff. And, you know, I'm always having a good time everything I do.
So, you know, like you said, you've done so many really cool things. You've been in a part of Riverdale. You've been on Nancy Drew and some other things as well. Is there anything or any particular character, any project you'd really like to go back and revisit at some point?
I mean, I had so much fun with Julie and the Phantoms, and that was definitely a show that I hoped, you know, we'd have more opportunities to tell more of that story. So that's a character that's always going to stay near and dear to my heart. You know, given a chance to step into Amber again, I would do it in a heartbeat.
I think a lot of fans are with you on that too. So we'll have to keep our fingers crossed for, hey, you never know, right? You just never know. So, Allison, before I let you go, I'm sure it's a lot of fun working on shows and movies like Peacemaker. When the cameras aren't rolling as well, I know when a lot of the fun happens. So did you have any fun behind-the-scenes stories that you could share with us? Or any pranksters on set? Or were you guys not able to really do a whole lot of that stuff?
No, I mean, we were finding our feet. We shot the first couple of episodes. And so everyone's working it out. But I can tell you that it was a fun, really entertaining set to be on. I think audiences are going to, that joy is going to translate 100% on screen. And I think fans are going to be in for a real big treat with this show.
The first three episodes of Peacemaker are actually now streaming on HBO Max. So you could dive right into that big time. Also Brazen streaming on Netflix as well, which looks like a really cool, I'm already trying to figure out the mystery just based on the trailer alone. And I can't wait to dive into that as well. It's Allison Araya. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank
to talk
you.
To us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And I can tell you that the Peacemaker series is just as wild and crazy and fun as Allison described it as. If you've already streamed the first few episodes on HBO Max, you know what I'm talking about. It's going to be a wild, fun ride this entire season. And getting to see Amber and just that first scene alone with them, I thought was really, really fun. And that's just the tip of the iceberg for DC's Peacemaker, which is now streaming on HBO Max. And yeah, I'm getting ready to hit play on Brazen as well on Netflix. Can't wait to dive into that mystery too. Again, thanks to Allison Araya for joining me this week to talk about DC's Peacemaker and Brazen and all kinds of other cool stuff that she's got going on. Up next, going to dive into some reviews and start with the season 2 premiere of Superman and Lois. I'm James Witham, and this is the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Chris Vance from Supergirl, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Truth, justice, and family ties as well. The season 2 premiere of Superman and Lois has come and gone on the CW, and I wanted to give a spoiler-filled review of what I thought of the season 2 premiere, and just the emotional value of this show just continues to be spot on as far as I'm concerned. And for a Superman show, it says a lot. Well, Superman and Lois Lane show. Let me correct myself there. It says a lot that this show can be so relatable to everyday life. And that is something that doesn't bog down the show. It actually enhances the show. Like seeing, you know, how Clark and Lois are struggling with their family. And, you know, Lois is actually carrying a pretty heavy burden with everything that went down with John Henry and Natalie, and Natalie showing up. And Lois carrying some guilt for how she reacted in that situation that we saw at the end of the season 1 finale last season. And, you know, kind of indirectly lashing out at Clark and her family in regards to that. And you know, dealing with everything that comes with that, I thought was really, really interesting. And they really just kind of dealt with that in the one episode and didn't drag it out. Although we could see it drag out a little bit more, I think, throughout the season. And then, of course, Jonathan getting caught in his compromising position there. Awkward, right? But again, true to life, how do you react if you're parents? And then Clark's got to have, like, the talk, and the teenagers know that the talk is coming. sort of thing. So that was a really fun, awkward moment in the episode. Maybe shouldn't have been funny, but certainly was. And then you see Jordan and you know, Sarah's come back. She's been away. And he kind of overdoes it a little bit. And it freaks her out a bit. And again, true to life, to relationships when you're that age. If you remember, you know, back then, or maybe that age now, and you're understanding that that's sometimes how it goes. But I think that that's one of the things I love about this show the most, is that it has those super elements. It still has that comic book series feel, but it also has these deep, you know, real life moments in it that just shine through so much. But you see that Clark's relationship with the U.S. government is becoming strained, and he saves that North Korean sub. And you automatically know, right, this is going to be a problem, right? But again, Clark is an equal opportunity hero. He wants to make sure that he saves everyone and isn't tied to any, you know, geopolitical happenings or anything. And for the government, that is a problem. It's like, you know, choose America or don't, but suffer the consequences if you choose not to, sort of thing. So that is certainly tension that's going to ramp up throughout the entire season. And is the government involved with the earthquake that we saw in Smallville? Are they not? It was certainly a lot of hints there. Certainly plenty of hints to say that they were. And what was that we saw at the end of this first episode of season two? Could they be hinting at a major, and I do mean major, Superman villain that has caused the Man of Steel more than his fair share of headaches over his tenure? Because, and I think you know who I'm talking about. I can't say it, but I think you know who I'm talking about. But there's certainly other directions that they can go with this as well. But how does Clark ultimately end up dealing with the fact that he's taking this heat from the U.S. government? Because he, you know, he's standing tall. There's no doubt about that. And he's saying, you know, hey, you're not going to stop me from saving lives that need saving. And it didn't necessarily directly affect, you know, any military operation or anything like that. But I do know one thing. If you mess with Smallville, then you mess with Clark Kent. You mess with Superman. That is for sure. And I really am starting to dig this dynamic between John Henry and Natalie. And obviously, again, hard being a teenager in Smallville, hard being a teenager that just crash landed on a planet that she doesn't know anything about, in a timeline that she doesn't know anything about. So, I mean, pile all that on the shoulders of Natalie, and yeah, she's going to be a little upset. But then it's interesting when she gets introduced to Clark's family, and when she and Lois have their moment, their I don't want to call it reconciliation, but almost like a bit of a bonding moment there. The whole, you know, I'm not really your mom, but I want to get to know you sort of thing. And then she sees how welcoming the Kent family is. That, to me, that moment, and just you see the relief and just all of so much angst just fall right off of her shoulders in that moment. I thought that was a really, really powerful moment. And again, a great emotional moment in an episode of a Superman series that also has plenty of intrigue and action going on in it as well. So yeah, yet another great premiere for Superman and Lois. I think season two has the potential to be even better than season one was. And season one was pretty damn good. So do not discount this show as, again, one of the top shows of the year, Superman and Lois, which you can watch every Tuesday night on the CW going forward. That's going to do it for my spoiler-filled review of the Season 2 premiere of Superman and Lois. Got another premiere to talk about, and it happened on the same night. Naomi just premiered from DC as well. Talk about that next, full of spoilers, on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Hi, this is John Sipos from Krypton, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
In case you hadn't heard, another brand new DC comic series has headed to the CW. Naomi premiered this past week, so yeah, you know it's time for my spoiler-filled review of the premiere. And I gotta say that I remember reading the Naomi comic when it first came out from Brian Michael Bendis and company, and I gotta say I was taken in by it right away just because of how infectious of a personality that Naomi had and how likable of a character she was. And boy, did that transfer onto the screen. And, you know, a lot of the credit for that has to go to Casey Walfall. You also have to get a lot of credit to Ava DuVernay and company who put on this show, because that was the one key thing that I needed from this series, was for that character to translate as being such the likable character that she was in the comics, and that she is, really. I shouldn't say was, because she absolutely is. She embodies that on the screen, and you see that, you know, she's got a lot going on. She's a smart kid. She gets along with pretty much everybody, and that's one of the things I really like about this story right off the bat, is that usually, you know, you've got your protagonist, you've got your antagonist, and it's usually the one girl's, you know, she's a little bit nerdy, but she's also kind of popular, but then you've also got the other girl that's like jealous of her or whatever, and they just don't like each other. We don't really see that, not in this first episode anyway. You don't really see that, and I love that that's really not a focus of the story. It's more about who Naomi is, where she comes from, as we find that out as the show goes on, and her circle of friends as well. I think that it's really cool that they surrounded her with such a great cast and such a great circle of friends around her. She's got her best friend, Annabelle. At least I think that's her best friend anyway. If you read the comics, you know who Lourdes is, and I think that Camila Moreno, in short work, did a really good job with that, and that'll be interesting going forward. I thought that Alexander Wraith was excellent as D, and you get that bit, you know, again, big spoilers here, when the wings pop out at the end, and he just does such a great job at presenting himself as this mysterious figure that maybe has the answers, maybe doesn't, sort of thing. So I really, really liked that. I think that the relationship between Naomi and Nathan is an interesting one. There's a lot of great chemistry there between Casey and Daniel Puig's character. So that was really, really nice. This was a show that was, I think, cast very well and presented very well. And even though there's a little bit of a rivalry there between Nathan and Anthony, you don't really see that being all that combative. And again, refreshing in that, yes, there is a little bit of, you know, Hannah like this dude because you like this dude sort of thing going on. At the end of the day, they all seem to get together and kind of just rally around Naomi. And that's just, you know, we'll find out what her powers are. I mean, if you read the comics, you kind of know what her powers are. But what her real power is, I think, is to bring people together. As corny as that sounds, is that everybody wants to be around her. She is just this magnet for positivity and for people just wanting to be around her and wanting the best for her. And I think that that's really, really neat. And what I do think we're going to get at some point is the confrontation with the parents, though, because obviously the parents know more than they're letting on. You see the mystery start to unravel. She finds the newspaper and knows that something happened on her adoption day. She has a confrontation with Zumbato in the woods, and she knows that something's going on with him as well. So there's a lot of good intrigue in this show. There's a lot of really likable characters, and it's just fun, quite frankly. And I know that maybe this show isn't going to be everybody's cup of tea, but it's just a fun show with some likable characters, and it's a great coming-of-age story with a kid that's just a good kid and that, you know, loves Superman, and hey, don't we all, right? And, you know, it's funny, you call the, you know, one of the Superman's nicknames over the years has been the Big Blue Boy Scout, and she really seems to embody that sort of, you know, just plain good persona, Naomi does. And I just love that about her, and it's almost like, hey, if you're going to model yourself after Superman, you've done a darn good job in presenting yourself as such. Now, I'm sure there's going to be some combative moments as she starts to, you know, unravel the mystery of who she is and where she came from and things like that. And I don't think that's going to affect her ability to be a likable character at all. But this is just one of those shows you could tell it's just getting started. You could tell this is a show that if written well, and I have no doubt that it will be, has a really, really bright future. And a cast that's really going to come into their own, I think, in the next few episodes. So make sure you're watching Naomi Tuesday night, 9 o'clock on the CW. I don't think you'll be sorry that you did. That's going to do it for my spoiler-filled review of Naomi, the series premiere. Up next, speaking of the CW, some interesting nerd news to talk about. I'm James Witham, and this is the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Echo Kellum, and you're listening to Down and Nerdy Podcast.
The heroes of tomorrow are about to get a very familiar teacher. It's time for nerd news, and a very surprising bit of news from the CW, first reported by Deadline, is that David Ramsey is going to be headlining a new series called Justice U on the CW. You know who John Diggle is. I don't need to explain that to you. I'm not going to talk down to you here. I will tell you that the series seems to center around Diggle on a new mission. He's going to recruit five young metahumans. They're going to live undercover as freshmen at a prestigious university, and he's going to oversee their education and train them to become the heroes of tomorrow. Now, when I first heard about this series, I thought to myself, okay, we're going to get a bunch of familiar faces. Diggle's going to put a young team together. I figured it's going to be a young team anyway, and we're going to go from there. And I'm thinking, you know, this is a great way to maybe bring Mia Queen back into the mix. Then I read this description, and Mia's clearly too old to be a part of Diggle's team, I would think, anyway. So, you know, kind of where do you go from here? And part of me is a little disappointed, and then part of me is like, you know what? You need to let the Mia Queen thing go. I mean, that's a character, Catherine McNamara. We saw her in the Flash Armageddon event, and you think, okay, they're bringing her back into the fold, or they're reminding people about the Green Arrow and the Canaries pilot that was just not picked up, the soft pilot in that series that didn't go forward. And then you get this, and I think that this is a way to maybe move on from that. Maybe I just need to let it go because that's a show that I really wanted to see. But this is interesting because do you go for names that you know from the comics, or do you kind of brush that off and go ahead and introduce all new characters altogether? Because there's some pluses and minuses to doing either or of those things. And maybe there'll be a little bit of a mix of both. Because if you give me brand new characters, there's intrigue there that I think is really interesting. And I think that you could really, really make something out of. Because it wouldn't be the first time that they sort of created new characters or had characters that were inspired by other characters that we already knew. That wouldn't be surprising at all. But at the same time, you know, Diggle is a good name if you're an Arrowverse fan. But I think you need something else. I think you need at least another name or another familiar character to kind of drive this thing forward to make people go, oh, yeah, I want to make sure that I see that. Now, who that's going to be, I'm not sure at this point because, I mean, it's anybody's guess, especially since things are in the early going. And this is not a direct-to-series order either. This is a pilot order. We saw how that worked out for Wonder Girl. We saw how that worked out for the Powerpuff Girls. We saw how that worked out for Green Arrow and the Canaries and many other series that were supposed to be going to the CW. So, you know, you got to pump the brakes on this one a little. But I do think, and by the way, John Diggle himself, David Ramsey, would be directing the pilot. Of course, he's directed several episodes of Arrowverse series already. So, that's another bonus when you've got David Ramsey on board and you have somebody that can be at the helm for that as well and really just go all in on this thing. But I have all the confidence in the world in David Ramsey, both in the director's chair and starring in this series. And I think, you know, it's the regular cast of characters behind the scenes for your Arrowverse series with Berlanti and company. So here's the deal. I mean, I think that this is a good idea on paper, but I think I've got to find out who some of these characters are going to be before I can really give this thing a full vote of confidence. Looks like there's not a ton of confidence, is not as much as there used to be anyway, in the Batman after fans have found out what the rating is going to be. And I'm rolling my eyes, and you can't see that right now. But the Batman is going to be rated PG-13, and people are freaking out. Look, I understand you wanted this to be rated R. This is why, I mean, I don't get why people hug the R rating for all that it's worth and really, really just have their heart set on it, and then it gets ripped out of their chest and lit on fire when you don't get what you want. This movie will not be defined by its rating. Just because it's not going to have the really gruesome, effect that you thought it was going to be, that it was going to be Saw with a cowl. No, that's never what this movie was going to be. It is a noir-style story, which those can be pretty freaking dark, by the way. You don't need an R rating to get that darkness, and I don't understand why everybody thinks you do. The fact that you automatically thought, based on the trailer, that this thing was going to be rated R, and it just didn't work out for you. I don't understand that. It makes me think of a movie, The Prestige. Remember that? It was Christian Bale, I think, and Hugh Jackman were in that movie together. And again, it may, very much an apples and oranges comparison. I understand that. But it was another kind of, you know, almost noir type story. It was a Christopher Nolan movie. And Scarlett Johansson was in it as well. That's right. So that movie had some very dark tones and very dark elements. That was PG-13, and that was a fantastic movie, in my opinion. I thought it was a precursor to Nolan taking over as you know, the helm of a Batman trilogy, too, by the way. So this can be done in PG-13, and it can be done really, really well. If that ruins it for you, and if you just can't get that super, you know, serial killer effect for the Riddler that you wanted because it's PG-13, I think you're underestimated. Just because you're not seeing gore and there's not F-bombs being dropped all over the place doesn't mean it's not going to be a good movie. You can have dark. You can have disturbing. You can have so many things in a PG-13 movie and push the envelope. And things don't have to be rated R to be good. I know that you think that this is a missed opportunity. I think it's just something you need to let go, quite frankly, because this rating is not going to define what this movie is. What they're trying to define is a Batman of the future that they're going to have in Robert Pattinson and Zoe Kravitz being the future as Catwoman and all of these other things, and trying to build a new Batman universe. And quite frankly, having a PG-13 rating opens that up to so many different audiences. And I don't think that you need to shy away from that fact, first of all. And second of all, I mean, let's just be honest with ourselves, right? I know you've been waiting for a rated R Batman movie, and maybe we'll get one at some point in the future. Maybe this just isn't the story for that. Maybe you need to wrap your head around that. Even though this Riddler character looks deep and creepy and just awful as far as a serial killer goes, maybe this just isn't the right time for a rated R Batman movie. We'll get to Zoe Kravitz again here in just a second. But first, I want to talk about Disney sending another Pixar movie to Disney Plus. And Turning Red is going to be that movie coming out in March that's going to be sent to Disney Plus. And I mean, this has been an ongoing trend during the pandemic of Pixar movies being sent to the streamer instead of to the theaters. And I know that there are people that have worked on these movies tirelessly and that are very upset by this. I understand that. I understand that fans are freaking out that this is a growing trend for Pixar. But I'm going to say what's going to be, again, really uncomfortable to hear and might make some people very upset. First things first, and that is that it's not like some of these Pixar movies have been the Pixar movies of old, right? I think Pixar had a lot of hits in the early going and a lot of great storytelling. And I think that's diminished over time, and we don't want to admit that. And that's the uncomfortable truth of the whole thing, unfortunately, is that the Pixar movies, just to me, aren't what they were in the early going. And I know what you're thinking, and I'm just going to come out with it right now. This has nothing to do with more diverse characters, stories being told. This is just my opinion on the quality of the movies that they're putting out. And they're just, and quite frankly, they're not as fun to me anyway. I thought Luca was good, though. I thought Luca was a story that probably deserved the theatrical treatment and got the rug pulled out from under it. So I think that Pixar has every right to be upset about Luca. But again, was that on the same level as like a Toy Story? I don't know that it was. And before you say, well, that's not a fair comparison, why not? shouldn't you be able to hit that level of quality? I think that they built that reputation over the years of constantly hitting that level of quality, and now they're just struggling to find that. And while Turning Red looks cute and it looks like a fun movie and it's going to be a great movie for kids, it just doesn't have that wow, I really need to see that factor that Pixar used to have with every movie. And I think you can be upset about not going to the theater, and that's justified from a worker standpoint. But from a fan standpoint, first of all, it's going to be easier to watch it at home with your kids, is it not? So I don't think if you're a parent, you're complaining about this, right? And, you know, not being able to see it on the big screen. Okay, what are you missing from Turning Red that you need to see on the big screen? Because I'm not seeing it. And I know that maybe I'm not the right guy to ask because I am the, you know, very few movies need to be seen on the big screen kind of guy. And hey, even Ben Affleck came out and said recently that he thinks the only movies that are going to go to theaters are big budget blockbusters and Marvel movies and stuff like that. And I've been saying that for the better part of what, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years since I've been doing this show? Who knows? So that's something that we just need to wrap our head around and accept at this point. And family movies are just one of those things that, yes, can draw huge numbers at the box office, but is every single one of them one that needs to be seen in the theater? I'm just not sure that it is. So I get why Pixar employees would be upset about this, but at the same time, at some point, you got to turn inward and say, are we telling the same high quality of stories that we used to? The animation's always good, but are the stories as good as they used to be? In my opinion, is I don't think they've been hitting that benchmark recently. Couple of trailers that I want to talk about. Speaking of Zoe Kravitz, she has a new movie coming to HBO Max on February the 10th, and that is Kimmy. Kimmy being the smart speaker that, you know, maybe may or may not be spying on our lives sort of thing. That's going to be a part of this. But basically, she thinks that she hears a murder in one of these recordings that she interprets, and then there she goes down the rabbit hole of that mystery and finding out if this woman needs help or not. One of the things I love, other than Zoe Kravitz's character, which, I mean, she seems, you know, paranoid, determined. There's so many things going on with this character, and it looks like it's going to have some interesting depth to it. So I think that's going to be really interesting. But Rita Wilson playing sort of this evil character. I don't want to say evil, but, you know, shady character. You don't get to see Rita Wilson in that role ever. And I'm here for that. I think that that's going to be super, super interesting. And I think that this movie is going to, you know, maybe raise some questions about the connected world that we live in, but also, you know, just be a fun thriller that, you know, it's a like a race against the clock sort of thing that, you know, it's don't get too deep in thought about this one. Yeah, it might be a good, you know, conversation starter type movie, but at the same time, maybe you just sit back and have fun with this one and not try to overthink it and make it, you know, an Oscar contender or anything like that. Maybe it is, you know, I don't know, I haven't seen it yet. But, you know, don't, again, we overthink movies so much nowadays because we want everything to be awards caliber. If you'd like it, what's wrong with that? And I think that Kimmy is going to be one of those movies. We'll find out February 10th when it comes out on HBO Max. If you're a Bob's Burgers fan, oh, I'm sure you're excited about the Bob's Burgers movie, which is going to be Memorial Day weekend. That's May the 27th, and that's when that movie is going to be coming out. And basically, the trailer doesn't say give us a whole lot about the movie. It just, you know, if you're a fan of Bob's Burgers, you already know the fun that you get with this family and people that are surrounding themselves with this family and the voice cast that's involved. I think the trailer was more for people that don't watch Bob's Burgers and kind of introducing them quickly to this family and like, hey, if you haven't been watching this show, maybe you come see the movie and you'll get hooked on the show that way. So what's really happening, what we really find out is in the synopsis, and basically what happens is a ruptured water main creates this huge sinkhole in front of the Bob's Burgers, and it blocks the entrance. And, you know, this is right before the big summer push when the Belchers are making a lot of their money. So the business is struggling, and they're trying to figure out a way to keep it above water, pun intended. And basically there's this mystery that the kids are trying to solve as well. They could save the family restaurant, and there's going to be some dangerous stuff. There's going to be some fun stuff involved as well. And basically it's just going to be the fight for this family and to get their business to survive. So, I mean, that sounds deep, but I'm sure that everyone involved is going to find a way to make it so it's not that deep at all. and it's just a fun ride with this family. So I, you know, this show is more popular than I ever realized. And then when I went to Comic-Con my first year, I saw the crowd around the Bob's Burgers table, and I was like, hold on a second. This show is a lot bigger than I expected. So I'm surprised this took as long as it did to happen. But hey, Memorial Day weekend this year, barring any unforeseen circumstances, the Belchers are hitting the big screen, and I think that's something to be excited about. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Again, thanks to my amazing guests, Elodie Young and Martha Milan from The Cleaning Lady on Fox. Also, Allison Araya from DC's Peacemaker and Netflix's Brazen. So many fun moments with the both of them. Make sure you're following along with us on social media as well, at Down and Nerdy 757 on Twitter and on Instagram, and at Down and Nerdy on Facebook. Don't forget, also, we're online at downandnerdypodcast.com, and you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, you never have to apologize for being a nerd, so let your fan flag fly and be good to your fellow nerds.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read Podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to Season 1, we are thrilled to announce the launch of Season 2. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make Season 2 even more memorable together.